Symbiosis. It was only a phone call, regular as clockwork, every Sunday evening at 5 p.m. my time. He was, of course, 4 hours behind, and so it was in his lunch hour, I supposed, although I didn't ask, and he didn't say. For 2 years he'd been calling me from prison. It made me wince thinking he was languishing in prison, and that call reminded me of why he was there and I wasn't. It all seemed so complicated on Sunday. Every other day of the week I could forget, or at least try to forget. I'd go about my daily business, but when Sunday came around, a pall descended over my place and I dreaded it. Once I tried to be somewhere else, so I didn't have to take the call. But all I did was worry and fret, and so I made the decision to always be there. I'm not sure if I was a comfort to him, or what he thought of our chats. He seemed bright enough, and told me what he'd been doing and who he'd been doing it with. If I were asked to try and analyze why he called, I'd have to say that it was a link to the outside world, but I don't think that's all the answer. I know he's allowed television and radio, so he knows all the outside news, all the latest. No, I think if someone asked me why he called, I'd have to say, and I've thought about this on and off for the last 3.5 years, I'd have to say that he was rubbing it in. Before the incident, I would have told anybody who cared to listen that Mike was the sweetest, kindest, most thoughtful bloke you could meet. Not a bad bone in his body. But now, as I think on it, he was vindictive and trying to play on my conscience. But I'm not the one who should feel guilty. He has a way of saying things that got under my skin and stayed there. He found subtle phrases that made the hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. Things like, "Now, don't you worry about me, Donna. We all have our cross to bear." And, "Just remember, Donna, if it wasn't for that one moment, things might have been different." I wanted to believe that he was still that sweet guy I knew, but somehow, when he said those things, I felt that he was plotting revenge. He wasn't in prison 3 months when he said he'd make sure I was taken care of. I know you could take it two ways, but the way he said taken care of, well, I started to deadlock the doors and pull the blinds down in the day. You hear stories about these prison guys telling their mates all the ins and outs, and then they come after you. I decided to get a dog for company not long after his 6 months. I know I'm busy and I really didn't have the time to look after a dog, but I felt I had to be proactive and, well, I felt a dog would be good company. But then don't ask me how he found out or anything like that. But he asked me how my dog was coming along. I started to tell him about Bully, my Doberman, when I suddenly realized I hadn't mentioned I had a dog. I'm not that good at being cagey, and so I excused myself and I said I had something on the stove and I had to go. I couldn't be sure, but I think I heard him laughing as I hung up. I've decided to go electronic after that, and poor Bully would have gone to the pound if he hadn't got run over by the car the very next day. I thought I'd latch the back gate, but he got out, and with little or no road sense, he was just an accident waiting to happen. No one saw anything, of course, and it was a hit and run. The vet said he would have died quite quickly, which was a small comfort to me. The electronic surveillance man said I needed all the latest gear, having such an old rambling house, and I coughed up nearly $1,500. So the next time he rang, I switched on the voice machine, the timer for the outside lights, the gate alarm, and the in-house sensor switches, and I felt I had the upper hand. He was back to his usual chatter, telling me about some boofhead who got beat up and how he had quit smoking. He said he wanted to be fit. Something about 100 push-ups in the morning and a session in the gym in the arvo. I couldn't imagine him a fitness freak. He was so IT. He used to wear loafers and chino pants and polo shirts, for heaven's sakes. The smoking I could well understand. He had told me many times in graphic detail about the men who'd been assaulted for a ciggy. Why he went into detail for my benefit, I don't know. But he would recount it all, blow by blow, if you know what I mean. I listened impassively and tried to make my voice expressionless, but it wasn't easy. I drifted away from all my friends after the investigation, so I didn't have a sounding board to find out if this was usual behaviour for a prison inmate. My new job entailed being in an office on my own. I'd get things sent to me via email or fax, so I didn't get much chance to socialise. Not that I mind, really. I've never been one for a group activities. More a go-it-alone, independent type. That's probably why he singled me out. He knew I was a loner, not likely to say anything about his dealings. And I didn't. About 1 year into his sentence, he sent me a letter. I did wonder how he knew where I lived, but I was in the phone book, so it was an easy assumption. It was quite a lengthy letter. He started off all chatty and friendly, and then, around page 2, the mood changed. He went straight from watching The Simpsons to cryptic phrases like, "We all know what goes on. You only have to watch and listen," he wrote. And, "It's not what you know, but who you know." His sarcasm wasn't funny. I kept the letter in my handbag. It bothered me, and I must have read it 100 times. I changed to a P.O. box after that. I figured I was just over the road from the post office at work, so it made sense. And if I received a letter from him, well, I could just decide about it there and then and pop it in the bin, if I wanted to. Just to be on the safe side, I'd vary my day. Sometimes I took the bus, other days the train to work. I walked different routes and left at different times. I saw a movie about a guy who went through the rubbish of his victims, so I wouldn't throw mine away. I would double bag it and make a big hole in the backyard, and I buried it. I began to vary my appearance, too. I'd wear twin sets one day and grunge the next. The people at work thought I was a bit weird, but I didn't talk to them much anyway, and I ate my lunch in my office, so they just left me alone. Then it all changed on that fateful Sunday. He asked me why I'd gone a redhead. I'd coloured my hair on the Saturday, and I hadn't even gone to the shops or anything. It spooked me. I was frantic. I rushed around the house looking for something, anything that would give me a clue, but there was nothing. I turned off all the lights and then turned them on again. I activated all my security, and that's when it hit me. The security guy was more than helpful. He was in the house all day. I even gave him coffee and cake. He must have installed a camera, or several cameras. I began to cry, thinking that I could have been broadcast on the net for months, my every action for the public domain. I grabbed my mohair throw from the settee and covered my head and crawled into the bedroom. I had the security man install one of those sensors in the corner, but it could have been a camera for all I knew. So I grabbed a cardigan from my easy chair and threw it at the sensor. My first shot wasn't too good, so I lunged at it with the deodorant. I sprayed and sprayed until the can was empty. The sensor was covered in white dripping like stalactites onto the carpet. I gathered all my spray cans then from Life spray to air freshener and went around systematically spraying all the electronic devices I could find. As I sat on the kitchen floor feeling drained, the phone rang and I screamed. I wasn't expecting a call and so I was reluctant to pick up. What I heard sent a chill down my spine, a cold, calculating laugh, nothing more. I didn't just slam the phone down, I pulled it out of the wall. It careered past my photos and knocked the picture of Bully onto the floor, breaking the glass. As I looked at the mess, I suddenly realized he knew about Bully before I'd had the security installed. That meant he'd been watching me for months. I was shaking as I thought about all the things I'd done. How much did he know? Had he seen? I wondered why he was so chatty and nice. He had all the cards. I pulled the tablecloth off the table and huddled under it. I heard that laugh, his laugh, all the while he was playing me, making me a nervous wreck. How many hours had I laid in bed thinking of him? How many times had I opened that letter and read it? Huddled there under the cloth, I began to see his plan. He wanted to break me. He was breaking me as sure as the prison system was trying to break him. Well, two can play at that game, I thought. I crouched under the cloth and began to plan. What did I know about him? What could I comfortably assume about him? How could I exact revenge? Every day I plotted and planned. I made lists and files and secrets. It was all so consuming I lost my job. I didn't have time to do two things. Then, because I couldn't pay the bills, my electricity was cut. But I went on the dole and brought candles. I guess I wasn't eating very well because my clothes hung off my bones and my hair started to fall out. I dipped into my savings and reconnected the phone. It wasn't long till Sunday. He didn't ring. I sat by the phone for hours waiting, but he didn't ring. I wasn't going to miss his call, no matter when it came, and so I camped by the phone on the floor. After a week, the phone rang. Snatching it off the wall, I said, "Hello?" He told me he had some exciting news. He said he was getting out sooner than expected, and named the day, the very hour. He ended with, "See you soon." It was a warm, sunny day that Friday. The weatherman had said we look forward to a good weekend. I watched as the security gate opened and he walked through. He hadn't changed much, still recognizable after 3.5 years. He stood about 5 paces from the gate and surveyed his surroundings. His shadow was long at this early hour and it stretched across the path in my direction. He didn't move as I watched him. Then I saw him reel back from the shot. He clutched his chest and looked me straight in the eye. For that fleeting moment as our eyes met, he knew I had the upper hand. Then he fell forward, staggering in my direction. He sprawled out on the footpath, his coat and plastic shopping bag sliding, making a grating noise along the gravel. A crow laughed in the distance, mocking his situation. The electronic gate clanked open. A guard started running towards him as he lay still, his head skewed on one side, a slight breeze playing with his thinning hair. We get a call once a week. He didn't answer at first, but now we chat every Sunday.